relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Portions of the following program may contain pre-recorded material.
This is America First, and here's your host, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome back, dear friends, to America First, one-on-one with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump. I was recently asked to speak at an event at the Conservative Mothership, the Heritage Foundation, and the hosts had me listed on the program as TV and radio host. That was bad enough. But they didn't call me a journalist. For those of you who are unfamiliar with my background, I spent a long time, about 20 years in the national security field, especially counterterrorism, ending up as a professor of irregular warfare, National Defense University, at the Marine Corps University, and then running a company that did counterterrorism training for the FBI, the intelligence community, and parts of the U.S. military. As such, I don't consider myself to be a journalist, and I'd love to stay in touch with national security, and that's why I'm delighted to have with us somebody who my muse said, I must have her on the show. And that is why she is here. She is a research fellow at the Center for Technology Policy at the Heritage Foundation. Kara Frederick, welcome to One on One.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
This is like a very impressive bio I have in front of me. You have worked as a senior intelligence analyst for the U.S. Naval Special Warfare Command. Guys, you know what that is. Well, you should. That's where the frogs, as they like to call themselves, hang out. That's where you have individuals who go from being, you know, Green Berets, SEALs, to becoming something a little bit, things that, you know, we denied existed a long time ago. But she has, from there, gone to the private sector, helping to create the Facebook Global Security Counterterrorism Analysis Program. And today she's going to talk to us about big tech. Kara, first things first, let's talk about the state of play, staying open source. How good or how weak is the collaboration between government, the intelligence community, CT professionals, and the private sector when it comes to identifying threats to America and tracking bad guys? Are you satisfied? Where are we at?
So my knowledge is a bit stale. I left Facebook in 2017, and we were actively building out that apparatus since going to a smaller national security think tank called the Center for New American Security. I'm now at Heritage, but I cut my think tank teeth at a smaller national security-focused one. And what I advocated there for was more integration. So not just integration at higher levels where you have, you know, formal appointees and liaisons in the top offices of some of these intelligence agencies, but mostly on the ground. So when we worked overseas with places like you mentioned before, when we were doing our counterterrorism operations overseas, we had these fusion cells, yes, that we would call them. So we would integrate analysts at the lowest levels, and that exchange of know-how, that information sharing, that trading of best practices, I found that that was great and very organic at those levels. Because the higher you get, you know, the more strictures there are on what you can and can't say. People are very concerned about keeping their jobs and their reputations and the next place that they go. So I found it to be a lot more, there was a lot more utility at the lower levels, analyst to analyst exchanges. So when I was at CNAS, I thought, okay, if we're going to have this digital counterterrorism fight and, you know, maybe fight foreign malign influence operations, then we have to do it at the analyst level. So I said, let's fuse, let's do it. Remember when Stanley McChrystal had his theory of Intel drives operations? So you can sort of apply that to the digital sphere and put those analysts on the ground working together with each other. Maybe someone from a threat intel shop from these private sector companies, is co-located with a government FBI analyst right. or a DIA analyst, and they exchange that organic information. I think the Biden administration is sort of thinking about something like that. You see the contours of these ideas sort of spread when they talk about countering malign foreign influence operations. I haven't seen it enacted yet, but I think that on the that ground level analysis, I think that is that integration is critical. When I was at Facebook, we had a very robust apparatus for law enforcement response requests. So when it came to child exploitation, there was a lot of back and forth between law enforcement and the interaction between Facebook and the government. And this is all, you know, again, open source, and people know this. They have transparency reports that they submit quarterly about law enforcement response requests. So that's sort of the level of the collaboration.
How much is all of this driven by, or how much of a problem is the difference of perspective from what you were doing as a counterterrorism intelligence professional for the SEALs and for others, vice the private sector, Facebook, Twitter, Signal, and everything else, that, you know, one half of that equation is driven by national security requirements. The other half, I think, for a large part of their activity, are worried about liability. They don't think in terms of national security. So aren't they discussing, aren't they communicating on completely different frequencies, Kara?
Oh, they've completely lost their way. So this was, you know, when I advocated for this integration, I think this was 2-3 years ago, and everything was kind of going as it should, right? Like, people were understanding that foreign malign influence operations, that foreign Islamic terrorism was a problem, that actual child exploitation was a problem. But now I think these companies are focused way more on political viewpoint censorship. And the Biden administration, all of our institutions and agencies right now, we're sort of inflating these definitions of extremism, of disinformation, of hate speech, of harm and safety in a way that is incongruent, I think, with the actual real threat. So yeah. If these private companies could actually stick to that foreign malign influence operations emanating from actual states, like have state links to them. I know attribution is getting more difficult. These state actors do this on purpose. They delegate and deputize patriotic netizens to conduct some of these disinformation operations. However, if companies can actually focus on that and the real problems, then, you know, all of these recommendations would hold and we'd be in a much better spot.
Yeah, I'm asking, well, we're going to actually delve deeply into that, you know, question of the politicization of the, you know, social media and the IT community. What I'm asking first before we get there is, companies aren't thinking about national security. Governments are. Companies are thinking about profit margins and liability. As a result, aren't you always going to have a lack of capacity to actually speak the same language?
I think you're right. I think you are right. Because one thing that I learned at Facebook is they cared first and foremost about three things. That bottom line at all costs, mm-hmm. right? Growth, again, at all costs. And then their brand and reputation. But the American government, right, they have a charge of securing the homeland for the American people. So you're right. They're always going to sort of be ships passing in the night in that regard. It is that brand and reputation element, yeah. I think, that makes them sort of think, okay, when we have our true liability considerations, we can liaise and work with the government because we want our brand and reputation to be solid. We want to be able to say if there was any sort of operational planning conducted on our platform by a foreign terrorist, that we did our due diligence. We investigated it. We made sure to the best possible degree that this couldn't happen in the future. So I think it's very important for them from a liability, brand and reputation standpoint. Right. And that's when those goals converge, but only then.
And how much, I'm curious, having been inside the belly of the beast, at Facebook, how much of an oddity were you, meaning somebody who actually understands national security? Are you very much in the minority, or are there more people in that industry who actually get what the threat is?
So there's a difference between when I got there and now. Mm-hmm. So when I got there in 2016, I would say that there was a decided lack of geopolitical cognition. You know, you're working at a company, you think that the locus of power in the universe is in Silicon Valley. You don't really care what's going on in D.C. You don't care about those national security professionals and their stuffy jackets and their sensible black shoes. That's not something you're thinking about. Right. You're thinking about, we are at the forefront of everything. We're building, we're shipping, we're building, we're shipping. We're doing it. So you don't necessarily think of yourselves as protecting the homeland, protecting America. You think of yourselves as a global entity responsible to a global constituency. And you build and you ship. And that's the ethos of the place. So, you know, the person next to you, they might be on a visa from China, from India, and they're just your coworker. They're just the programmer. But when, you know, I came in, I had been an embed at the National Security Agency. So I had that sort of patina following me. Right. Some of my friends weren't exactly happy about that, given the Snowden revelations and whatnot. So they were.
How did your colleagues treat you at Facebook?
Some were not pleased to shake my hand. And when I told them what I had done, some were impressed, right? Because there's name recognition when you work with Navy SEALs. People sort of understand what you did. So some people, I would say mostly some of the early legal immigrants would be like, wow, that's so cool. We watched this stuff on TV. Are you Carrie Madison? So like in dorky ways like that. But other people met me with a lot of skepticism. Yep, I wasn't a programmer. I came in and
very much not of their world. We're talking to Kara Frederick of the Heritage Foundation, formerly worked with the Naval Special Warfare Command. She spent time at Facebook. Now she's with the good guys. Follow her at Kara A. Frederick on Twitter. If you enjoy this show, if you don't want to be censored, if you want access to me, join our new Locals channel. It's gorka.locals.com. Material you can't access anywhere else, and direct access to me as well. That's gorka.locals.com. Join us today. Stay here for more One-on-One with Kara Frederick. We are coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is relieving the daily aches and pains of tens of thousands of Americans across the country, me included. But it's not just me, it's people like Debron from Massachusetts. This is Debron's story. I just started taking Relief Factor 4 days ago. My hip pain is gone. I had a horrible time sleeping because of the pain. I absolutely love how I am feeling. Thank you, Relief Factor. What a great story. That should be your story. That could be your story. Find out today. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those three weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Debron, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose except the pain? You know it makes sense. Do it today. Call 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com. 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com.
The most awesome pipes in talk radio. Sebastian Gorka.
Friends, I have to say a big thank you to all of you who have donated. We have hit our original target at the Angel Tree program. Over 1,000 children will be receiving a Christmas gift this Christmas because of you. These are children who have lost a mother or father to the prison system. God bless every single one of you who has donated. $25 gets them a Christmas gift, a message from their incarcerated parent, and the gospel. If you haven't donated, if you're looking in the last few days before Christmas to do something incredibly blessed. You literally are a Christmas angel when you do this, because 70% of these American children will end up in prison themselves. Let's break that cycle. Let's make them feel loved and a little less vulnerable. Make a donation today at sebgorka.com. Go to SEBGORKA, sebgorka.com. Click on the Angel Tree banner at the very, very top. Make a difference today. Or you can call them on 888-206-2794. That's 888-206-2794. sebgorka.com, the Angel Tree banner at the very top. God bless every single one of you who has donated and who will donate in the last few days of this campaign. Welcome back to One-on-One with me, Sebastian Gorka, and Kara Frederick. Okay, cyber, information security, social media. Let's start at the recent news. We have built in the last 20 years truly an enviable capacity. The way I used to describe it when I was teaching this stuff is our tactical and operational ability globally is unmatched. If we have your coordinates, if you're a high-value target, we can reach out and kill you within 72 hours. If we have SecDef or POTUS or presidential sign-off, we can get rid of you if you're a threat to the United States, if you're Al-Qaeda, ISIS, or what have you. It's great. It's not very strategic, but tactically it is superb. Today, after 20 years of building this capacity, we're seeing counterterrorism capabilities, Kara, being used for domestic purposes against those that are political targets of administration. I look specifically at the letter from the National Association of School Boards that was written in collusion, we now know this, with the White House, the Biden White House, before it was sent to AG Merrick Garland at the Department of Justice. And the letter talks about using tools, counterterrorism, national security tools, to target, surveil parents who are standing up at school boards because they don't like critical race theory being taught, or they don't like their children being in masks for 8 hours a day when there really is a nominal threat to anybody under the age of 18 who's healthy. Will you talk to us about what you are witnessing in this field as a former practitioner in the national security domain and give us your assessment of how worried all Americans of any political identity should be?
This is the thing that should send a chill up everybody's spines. Full stop. Because when the use of counterterrorism tools to direct it against Americans and their political viewpoints, normalizing the repurposing of counterterrorism tools for this purpose is absolutely terrifying, and I think it's only going to accelerate and increase. And we're seeing, as you said, in the physical space, this has happened with the National School Board Association, with DOJ and the counterterrorism elements of the FBI getting on this within 5 days.
As a former federal employee, I have never seen, unless it was a threat of imminent terrorist incident in the United States, the idea that a government agency, based upon a private letter from a non-governmental association, deployed intelligence assets within 6 days, never happened before.
And we're seeing the seeds of this develop in the digital space now as well. In July, there was a pilot program where Facebook threw out extremism warnings if you engage with mainstream conservative content. So, your grandmother could be looking at a Fox News article and she would get a warning, oh, you may have engaged with extremism. Is somebody you know dabbling in extremism? And that was a pilot program rolled out by Facebook in July of this year. You have one of the co-founders of Google. This is according to Molly Hemingway's reporting. He's said that Trump voters were extremists and considered using and repurposing the technology incubator Jigsaw, which was originally created to counter foreign Islamic terrorism, to influence Trump voters. And that's, again, Molly Hemingway's reporting in her book, Rigged. So you're starting to see sort of the seeds of this development now. The Global Internet Forum to Counter Terrorism, this is sort of a consortium of big companies and small companies and organizations. They have hash-sharing databases of things that were supposed to be foreign Islamic terrorism focused, like ISIS flags, and now they're expanding those databases to include right-leaning content. And there's sort of a general trajectory of focusing on inflated definitions of extremism, of white supremacists, because we all know Joe Biden tweeted out that Kyle Rittenhouse was a white supremacist as well. And you have, what's extremely troubling to me too, and not just in the digital space, but these former counterterrorism officials in Democrat administrations saying that, people who may have said over the loudspeaker, a pilot, let's go Brandon, that he could be compared to an ISIS lover, and then what would that happen? So what would happen then? So you're sort of seeing the normalization of people conflating Trump supporters mostly with extremists, with white supremacists, with domestic extremism. And that, to me, is starting to sort of normalize the way that people look at their fellow countrymen. And it's very specific in the government as well. Terrorism, the extremism, those definitions mean something. They mean action on the government's part. And when we're already normalizing this on Twitter, in the rest of the culture, on digital platforms, when some of those powerful people in the world, like the Google co-founder, are actively saying Trump supporters are enthralled to extremism, then you have a massive problem.
Let me ask you this, which is a more personal question. You see all of this happening as a Marine Corps brat, as somebody who worked closely with the SEALs, part of the intelligence community. How disappointing, or what is your reaction to the fact that I haven't seen anybody resign because of this? When you know, if I'm a part of the national security branch of the DOJ, and I'm getting a tasking that, oh, this school parent could be a problem because she spoke against, I don't know, pedophilic porn at the Fairfax County School Board. Why aren't we seeing, you know, people who took an oath of office like you did, like I did, to protect the Constitution say, excuse me, this is wrong. Here are my credentials. Here's my CAT card. I'm walking out of here.
I think we as a nation right now are so cowed. We're so cowed by the culture, which has been captured by this progressive leftist ideology. We're so cowed by an administration that says, we're not going to focus on foreign conflict. We're not going to focus on the genuine real threats like from our adversary, China. Heck, we're not even going to call the CCP an adversary. We're going to act like we're going to placate. We're going to be obsequious to our enemies. So when the state actually turns inward and focuses on a specific subset of the population and has tried over and over again to stratify the country to make conservatives second-class citizens, that is reason enough to be afraid. I mean, if you're a GS in one of these positions, you're shaking in your boots, not just for vaccine mandates, et cetera, but you're very aware that if you speak out, then you could be targeted, that you could be on the chopping block next. I mean, the self-censorship that this is engendering is massive as well. So I think, you know, people might have the impulse to speak out, to turn into their badge. But look what happened to the Marine Lieutenant Colonel when he said somebody should be held accountable for the disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal. The only people that are punished are those at the lower levels. Nobody at the top who's actually pushing these progressive policies is being punished whatsoever. So why would a regular GS who has to feed his family, why would they speak up?
Because America's worth it. That's why. Stay with us for more One-on-One here on America First with me, Sebastian Gorka, and Kara Frederick. Whether it's the regular Hellcat or whether it's the compensated RDP with that miniature red dot, I love them all. How did it take so long to invent a factory-compensated subcompact 9mm? Well, guess what? Springfield did it, and I'm a huge fan. And I'm Sebastian Gorka.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest-capacity micro-compact in the world. Available in standard or optics-ready configurations. Class-leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11+1 with the standard magazine and 13+1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend. Dr. G is in the house on America First.
This is America First. Welcome back to One on One with me, Sebastian Gorka, and Kara Frederick. Given our conversation with Kara, this is more important than ever. We have to have a place where patriots can congregate and can get the information they rely upon without anybody filtering it or censoring it. You've got that place. It's called Freedom Square. It is your new digital commonwealth, your patriotic portal designed to unite freedom-loving Americans. Log on now to create your custom dashboard where you can access all your favorite news sites, all the ones you love, Breitbart, Federalist, you name it, all in one place. Plus, your favorite podcasts as well, all at your fingertips. FreedomSquare.com is the place that you can collect all your resources customized to your dashboard. Loving Americans, you have a new home, FreedomSquare.com. Join us in the fight for freedom. See you on Freedom Square. Freedom lives here. FreedomSquare.com. So what do we do about all this? You've mapped out for us that there's a problem. National security tools are being used by the state against those who politically disagree with the state, who aren't revolutionaries, aren't a threat, and private sector Facebook, Twitter, etc., are colluding with the state entities. We have some great news. We have the president's Truth Social platform being launched next year. Rumble has said we will be the video provider, the data storage company for the President Trump's new platform. Do you welcome these alternatives like Parler, like Rumble, like Getter, or are we running the risk of ghettoizing conservative content and ceding the battlefield to the censorious, what Breitbart calls the galactic overlords, the masters of Palo Alto?
I think there's an element of that, but I do think that the only choice we may have in the future is to build out of it, so we have to start now. And you don't just look at the big tech platforms, right? So Rumble is a YouTube competitor, Parler is a Twitter competitor. That's great. We want those alternatives. We need to build those. And especially we need to build at all layers of the digital stack. So when Parler was, the plug was pulled, it went dark because its cloud hosting service, Amazon Web Services, withdrew services from Parler.
Right. The data storage facility was Amazon, and they said, we don't like you, you're conservatives. Not good planning on the part of Parler.
Exactly. So we have to build out those mid-tier to more foundational
layers. But that's billions, isn't it?
These new entrants do really well when they're backed by a billionaire backer. So Peter Thiel backing Rumble. And they have, in their big business proposition, they hope to, at least the last I read, have those cloud hosting services as well. So critically important. But again, not just the big tech companies. You're looking at online digital payment processors.
Yeah, so let's stop here. I wanted to ask you this. When you hear the story that broke maybe 2 months ago that Mike Flynn's wife has her credit card canceled by the bank because she's married to Mike Flynn. This is more than, you know, having your Twitter page deleted, right?
Exactly. It's the constriction of your digital life based on your political viewpoint. So it is the creation of a second class of citizenry based off of how they think. And this, to me, is fundamentally un-American. But you have most companies joining in now. You have online fundraising platforms, GoFundMe. When Kyle Rittenhouse got in trouble in Kenosha, GoFundMe actually paid funds to the rioters, and they wouldn't let him set up a fundraising account for Kyle Rittenhouse's
defense. For his defense.
Exactly, right. Exactly. GoDaddy, they are a web hosting service, and they kicked off a website that was supporting the Texas Heartbeat Act. You look at Kickstarter, they wouldn't allow a anti-abortion film to be advertised on their platform. You look at MailChimp, this is an email delivery service, and there's a group called Women for America First, kicked them off. They kicked off the Babylon Bee temporarily as well, right, until they raised a stink about it. Right. They had enough WASTA to do it, so that was good. But the Northern Virginia Tea Party, also their services were suspended by MailChimp. So it's not just these big social media platforms, but it's as daily life increasingly takes on digital characteristics, our world is getting smaller and smaller and smaller because we think a certain way. So conservatives, this should be a clarion call. We have to build anew. We have to start somewhere. Again, all of the technical advantages that accrue by Google having started years ago and Facebook as well, we've got to catch up somehow. And I think we have to start today. Yes, we still have to be on these platforms. As Seth Dillon from Babylon Bee says, yeah, we got to fight for our right to be there. I agree with him. But at the same time, as Bridget Phetasy says, whom you probably know, diversify or die.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you build in some redundancy because you're going to be dead in the water otherwise.
We're talking to a research fellow at the Center for Technology Policy of the Heritage Foundation, Kara Frederick, formerly with Facebook and worked with U.S. Naval Special Warfare Command, as well as many other positions. This is America First, one-on-one. Follow her at Kara A. Frederick on Twitter. All of you out there know that MyPillow doesn't have giant box stores or any shopping channels. They've been instead targeted by cancel culture, but now they want to pass on big savings directly to you. Get the lowest price in the history of MyPillow for their classic standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with my promo code. They also have queen-size pillows, regularly $79.98, now only $24.98 with promo code GORKA. Or king-size pillows, usually $89.98, now only $29.98 with my promo code. MyPillow is not just pillows. They have over 150 products, everything from sleepwear to actual beds. Promo code GORKA also works at mystore.com and frankspeech.com. Call today, 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com, promo code GORKA. You can now watch America First on TV, and I urge you to check us out. Go to salemnews.com or download the app today. You can also watch us on Roku and Fire Stick. That's Salem News Channel, the antidote to the lying legacy media. What can we do about the cyber overlords? Let's continue one-on-one with Kara Frederick. Kara, big question. You know, what is it? Lenin, who said it? What is to be done? What is to be done with big tech? They canceled a man who received 74 million votes. 74 million votes with more than 90 million followers on Twitter. Nixed. Like that. Off Twitter, off Facebook, off Instagram. Couple of suggestions coming from Capitol Hill. How do you rate these, or are we missing something? We have number one, the idea that the 230 immunity for internet social media platforms should be nixed. They said, we are not publishers, therefore you can't sue us. Well, if you're editing, if you're censoring, you are publishers. Or the other argument, that they are utilities and must be treated as utilities, meaning you can't limit access to a phone, therefore you can't limit access to Facebook or Twitter. Or do we break them up like we did with Marbell, or is there another response?
So I think first and foremost, you strip immunity from civil liability if these companies censor based on political viewpoints. So that should be non-negotiable.
So the 230 should go.
So I think you reform Section 230. Mm-hmm. So there's a concern about if you completely remove Section 230. Others have written about this, that these platforms, they tend to go for an over-removal bias, especially smaller companies mm-hmm. as well. So there's a school of thought where if it's completely gone, then these companies are going to be more merciless in their censorship. They're going to go for broke. They're going to say, okay, Seb Gorka wants to say something. Oh, we have people.
So they're not immune. Therefore, they will, if they are publishers, they're going to publish even less views.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. All right. And they will just start to remove everything. Scorched earth, especially when it comes to conservatives, because we know that leftists are particularly vociferous when it comes to any conservative having an opinion. Right. So they're going to complain. I'm sure they would be overly litigious, as they tend to be. So that over removal bias on behalf of smaller companies and bigger companies, I think they would just become even more of these censorship machines that they already are.
So what do we do?
So you reform it. You strip immunity if they do censor based off of political viewpoints.
And there's no if about it. They're doing it.
They are doing it. Yep. So then you don't let them become immune if they actually do that. And so you layer on these incentivizations for transparency as well. So some of these companies, they voluntarily give transparency reports, and it's about stuff they only really want you to see. Like I said in the beginning, the FBI requested this much information from us at this time. So those kinds of things. But they should be responsible for their content moderation policies and explaining to the American people how they.
But who cares if they say I moderated and I, you know, censored Gorka because he said this about ivermectin. So what? Does that stop them from doing it?
Well, if there's a public availability component, then they can't hide under a gauze of deniability.
No, but what is the consequence to them?
Oh, money. Money.
Oh, you mean in terms of legal action that I have to take?
That too. So I think the private right of action conversations are very interesting.
Okay.
So, you know, you have to give people their power and their recourse back. You have to make these companies give prompt and meaningful recourse to humans such as yourself, humans like people even in my office who have been censored.
Yeah, right now, if you ask a question of YouTube, nothing. Get zip. You contravened our community standards. That's the boilerplate. Nobody knows.
Exactly. Nobody. So there's no prompt and meaningful recourse right now. Right. So make the companies actually institute and implement that prompt and meaningful recourse. That's huge. And have penalties if they don't. Have teeth. And that's the problem. Now, a lot of these companies will absorb these huge multi-million dollar fines because that's just a drop in the bucket for them. So you have to think seriously about those numbers. You have to think seriously about the company's scale as well. I also think there's a privacy element here, and there's two components of it. So I do think we need some sort of a data protection framework. So you, as the user, should know how your data is being collected, how it's being stored, and who it's being shared with. These companies.
But there's no way they're going to give us that, because that is their bread and butter. I mean, you are the product. The user is the product.
Yep.
They are selling your proclivities, yep, your internet history to advertisers. That's how you're getting micro-targeted. The idea that, you know, 6 billion users are going to be given the data access from Facebook. I mean, then the only thing they'd be doing is providing data. And and most people, when your phone updates, oh, do you accept the terms of Facebook? Nobody reads those terms. I mean, you're selling everything about yourself for free, but nobody reads them, Cara. So we need realistic options.
Well, that's why it doesn't get to be voluntary anymore. That's why there has to be some teeth to it. Legislation has to have some teeth, and conservatives have to not be afraid to give legislation actual teeth. So none of this namby-pamby, squishy, like, companies should do this. Please, companies, let's do this. Because as we know, the proof is in the pudding. They're not doing it. So hit them in the ad tech model. Hit them in the privacy data model. There's another element here, algorithmic transparency, right? This is...
But they're not going to give away their code. They're not going to tell you, are they?
They don't have to tell you what the code is and how it's designed necessarily. There are proprietary concerns there. However, if you ask them to tell you how it operates and what impacts it has on users, they're going to have to tighten it up. They're not going to be able to just have to admit it when Frances Haugen leaked some whistleblower docs after the change in 2018 that nobody knew about until now. So if there's some teeth to this legislation and that they're made to
please
do this...
Please don't call Haugen a whistleblower, because she ain't
right,
a whistleblower.
The Democratic operative.
Thank you. The pseudo-whistleblower from Facebook. Yeah. Okay. What about the argument, I need your input, that these are utilities and they can't limit access to anybody?
Yeah, I think you can never go wrong when Clarence Thomas says a thing.
When he dissents and makes that observation.
Yep. So when he says that there's a lack of viable alternatives, I think the American polity has to seriously consider that. And the size, the scale, the reach of these platforms, people say we've seen it all before, but we have not seen it all before. This moment is entirely different because of that, because of the virality of their platforms as well, because of how dominant they've been allowed to be under a government intervention, which Section 230 is a government intervention.
Yep.
So they've been allowed to grow with this special government protection, which, okay, if you can apply equally, that's fine, some better than others. But I do think we need to take a serious look at the practices of these companies and think about giving legislation some teeth in that regard. There's another element, too. I think the business fraud, the breach of contract aspect. These companies...
Explain that.
Right? So they grew... They said that we are democratizers of information. We are being built to connect the world, and we are pure. Zuckerberg, as late as 2018 in October, stood in front of a Georgetown audience and said, we are going to be the platform that stands up for freedom of expression.
We'll continue our discussion here in America First.
The deepest voice in talk radio, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome back to One-on-One with me, Sebastian Gorka, and Cara Frederick. What is your advice to our millions of listeners and viewers when it comes to their use of social media and the management of their online information?
I would say be as circumspect about the platforms that you use as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, first and foremost, no American should be on TikTok because of
Number
the parent
one.
Company ByteDance, beholden to the CCP. Anything that you
Chinese.
Do on TikTok, China is got your number, period. So, and don't let your kids get on TikTok either. Not even talking about the moral issues of TikTok and how it's tearing at the fabric of our society by the social contagions that it pushes. But I would say look for these companies and these platforms that value privacy-preserving technologies. So the Signal Foundation created Signal. That grew out of One of the co-founders, he basically didn't want any sort of communist ethos to he lived under a surveillance state, and he didn't want this to happen again. That's how WhatsApp was created. Then they sold it to Facebook, and you know, now it's gone. So in the Signal Foundation, they are, at least for now, committed to actual privacy. So if you're talking, if you're having any sort of direct message conversation, WhatsApp is compromised, Twitter DMs compromised, make sure you're on Signal if you're a conservative at this point. You should be on Signal. Then keep your eyes open for when that inevitably gets exploited. Yeah. Hopefully not, but I would say right now, let a million signals flourish. If you're using a search engine, use DuckDuckGo instead of Google. Don't keep feeding the beast in this regard. So no TikTok, use Signal. Focus on privacy-preserving technologies that that will allow your personally identifiable information to be more secure than just a company that has some lazy fare privacy by design element to it.
And when it comes to hardware, where do you stand on the universal monopoly that iPhones have?
You know, it's a good product. For now, I'm unfortunately gonna keep using my iPhone until a better alternative comes along. But if conservatives make a better version of an iPhone, they should probably start now. I'd love to use it a few years down the road. So just be as careful as possible right now when if you have to use an iPhone. Again, good product. I love American innovation, but what we're seeing right now is a perversion of what we could be and what we used to be, frankly.
Well, that was fascinating. I could continue for hours. Thank you for your service to this nation, for working with those. They have ego issues, but we love them all, the SEALs. Follow her, Kara A. Frederick, on Twitter. I'm Sebastian Gorka. It's Friday. As ever, we will sign off with the boss. This is President Donald J. Trump.
We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield. We will never give in. We will never give up. We will never back down. We will never, ever surrender. My fellow Americans, our movement is far from over. In fact, our fight has only just begun.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.